Good day and welcome. I'm Paul Levoy, Editor-in-Chief of Ascend Magazine.
And I'm Sarah Riven, Government Affairs Director at Ventia.
And this is Week in Brief, your weekly roundup of the biggest news in licensure, regulation, and digital government for the week of August 6, 2023.
Today we'll be rounding up the top stories of the week, including Montana's move to remove continuing education requirements for nursing, a new measure in Missouri to join several medical interstate compacts, the U.S. State Department's launch of an enterprise AI strategy, and more.
Montana is considering removing continuing education requirements for registered nurses, despite vocal opposition from nurses in the state. Montana Governor Greg Gianforte's administration has proposed a rule that would eliminate all continuing education requirements for licensed registered nurses and advanced practice nurses.
You mentioned there's been vocal opposition from nurses. Can you tell us more about nurses rejecting the move?
Yes, the Montana Nurses Association is speaking out against the proposal. Association CEO Vicki Bird said that between her experience in the field and personal research that she's done, she found little to no public opposition towards nurses receiving regular, ongoing education in their careers. Speaking about the issue, she told the Daily Montanan it's unclear who asked for the change, and she reiterated that neither the Nurses Association nor patients support the idea.
Okay, but Paul, continuing education requirements are pretty common among regulated professions, I think. So is Montana alone in considering removing that requirement?
Currently, 42 states have some form of continuing education requirement for nurses, and they're widespread across Canada as well. There are nearly 20,000 nurses in the state of Montana, and Bird says that while not everyone loves meeting CE requirements, she couldn't find anyone opposing regular, ongoing education.
So then why is the state pursuing this?
According to Department of Labor spokesperson Jessica Nelson, the Montana Board of Nursing voted unanimously to approve this change. She cited similar rules upheld by the Board of Medical Examiners, which does not have any continuing education requirements for doctors to be licensed in the state. Nelson said professional organizations uphold their own continuing education requirements, which may make state requirements redundant.
So then what does the Nurses Association say in response to that?
Well, Bird herself said continuing education requirements in a field where treatment protocols can change weekly are crucial in maintaining a strong and competent healthcare workforce. Last year, the Gianforte administration received similar complaints from leaders in architecture and accounting over similar changes intended to reduce red tape for businesses. Opponents argued such deregulation could jeopardize public trust in their industries.
Last month, Missouri Governor Parson signed a bill aimed at attracting more doctors and medical experts to the state. When the bill goes into effect August 28, Missouri will join interstate compacts for physicians, professional counselors, and social workers.
We've discussed how and why states join interstate compacts before. So why has Missouri in particular elected to join these ones?
Well, for physicians to get licensed, for instance, the current Missouri licensing process can take anywhere from 4 to 6 months, and that has left some providers short-staffed. Supporters of this law hope that it will help cut licensing times in half.
Can you tell us more about the new provisions for physicians?
So for physicians who are licensed in another state, the Missouri Licensing Board will waive the state requirements for licensing within 6 months of receiving an application. For military spouses, they're hoping the process will be even quicker, so the board will waive those state requirements within 30 days of receiving an application.
Okay, is the situation the same for professional counselors then?
Well, for professional counselors, applicants who are licensed in another state or territory under the current policy may receive a license in Missouri if they are approved or in good standing with certain professional organizations. But going forward, any person who has held a license from another U.S. jurisdiction for at least 1 year can just go ahead and apply for an equivalent Missouri license. And then through the compact, an applicant for a license in the professional counselor space will be required to obtain or retain a license in a home state, but then they'll be able to work right away in Missouri.
And what about for social workers?
So Missouri is actually the first state to join the Social Work Licensure Compact, and that means it's not actually in effect yet. But similarly, once it does take effect, an applicant for a social work license will be required to obtain or retain a license in a home state and then be able to work in Missouri.
Sounds like the bill contains a lot of provisions related to licensure in the healthcare space. Is there anything else noteworthy about it?
Yes, I'd say there is regarding the scope of work for physical therapists. Going forward, physical therapists with a doctorate of physical therapy or 5 years of clinical experience will be able to treat patients without a referral from another healthcare provider. So people in the state will be able to go directly into physical therapy.
As the Biden administration lays the foundation for the expanded use of AI tools within the federal government, some agencies are already figuring out how federal employees can use these tools. The U.S. State Department, for one, is already gearing up to release its first enterprise AI strategy.
What's behind the department's move to take this initiative?
According to the department's chief data scientist, Giorleni Altamirano-Reo, it will help ensure the use of trustworthy AI as its data analytics capabilities continue to develop. Reo said the department's strategy will prioritize privacy, security, ethics, and equity in the use of AI tools, ensuring they are, in his words, trustworthy for the end user.
So this seems like a strategy they're working through. Is this the first move the department has taken to do something related to AI use?
Not quite. The State Department Center for Analytics recently published its principles for the use of AI, as well as an inventory of use cases for the technology in the Foreign Affairs Manual.
So what sort of applications do you think could come of this?
Well, the department has undertaken a project in which staff are using AI to analyze an archive of diplomatic cables and to identify documents for declassification. For context, State Department diplomatic cables remain classified for a quarter century. At that point, the documents are reviewed to determine whether they should remain classified or can be declassified fully or partially. According to Reo, the AI tools, which use natural language processing to review the documents, have reached the same declassification decisions as human reviewers about 97% of the time.
The Pennsylvania Department of State has been expanding awareness of its occupational crosswalk tool that helps veterans and service members translate their military experience into civilian career opportunities. The occupational crosswalk launched in February of this year, so it's still a fairly new resource.
You mentioned the Department of State is expanding awareness. What do you mean by that?
So the department's deputy policy director, Andrew LaFrat, played a pivotal role creating the crosswalk, and he's been drumming up awareness and support for the initiative through a sort of press tour talking about it. He presented to the Federal Department of Defense in April, and then in May, he was featured on a podcast discussing key developments in licensing and regulation. And most recently, he spoke to the Pennsylvania Governor's Advisory Council on Veterans Services. Now, that was just back in July, so that's the reason for the increased attention on the occupational crosswalk today.
Can you tell us more about the occupational crosswalk?
So the crosswalk is a series of charts for each occupation licensed by the Department of State. It compares licensing requirements with typical duties, training, qualifications, and credentials that are relevant to military occupations.
Do you have information about the scope of this issue in the state?
I sure do, Paul. Pennsylvania is home to nearly 850,000 veterans, so the administration really wants to make employment accessible to them.
Okay, there's clearly a demand for these kinds of services in the state. So what else is it doing to support veterans?
Other provisions of their recent policy include allowing a license to be issued even if a military applicant does not meet educational requirements, but they do have certain military experience. They also are expediting license application reviews for military applicants, providing license fee waivers for military spouses who must relocate with the military, and more.
Well, that's all for this week. Thanks as always for listening. I'm Paul.
And I'm Sarah.
Don't forget to sign up for Ascend Magazine's Week in Brief. The link is in the show notes. And subscribe to Ascend Radio. Till next time, stay informed and stay safe.